Sways the future, and behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadow, keeping watch above his own. And if we will only make the right choice, we will be able to transform this pending cosmic elegy into a creative psalm of peace. If we will make the right choice, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our world into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. If we will but make the right choice, we will be able to speed up the day all over America and all over the world when justice will roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream.
That's Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., delivering his Beyond Vietnam speech at New York's Riverside Church on April 4th, 1967, a year to the day before he was assassinated, April 4th, 1968, in Memphis, Tennessee, 53 years ago. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for a senior news producer to join our New York City team. Check it out at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
Are you a KBOO member? Tell us why you support KBOO. Call our listener testimonial line and leave a message telling us why you support KBOO Community Radio. Testimonials will be used on air during our next membership drive. Call 503-231-8032, extension 302. That's 503-231-8032, extension 302. Thanks.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8 a.m. It's Monday. We are trying to raise a bit more of the dollars it takes to keep KBOO coming to you. And some of the folks, some of your friends and neighbors have stepped up already. Right now, I would like to thank Curtis, Rose City Lock and Safe, Robert, and Karen, who've all chipped in to keep KBOO running, keep KBOO, KBOO. Make sure that the signal coming at you from 90.7 FM is what you've come to expect, what you've come to rely on. Some of y'all will have the means to join this effort, and we invite you to do so at kboo.fm/give, or you can text KBOO to 44321. With that in mind, we're going to move on to more talk radio with your hosts, Cecil and Celeste. Stay tuned.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. You're listening to your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 in Hood River, Oregon, White Salmon, Washington. In Philomath, Corvallis, it's 104.3, and KBOO.fm everywhere else on the World Wide Web. This is More Talk Radio, and I'm here with Cecil, and I am Celeste. Good morning. Here's your preload so you can join in, you know, like put it in your speed dial or, you know, have it already loaded. 503-231-8187. There we go. Got that out of the way. Okay.
Very good.
So last week we mentioned that we were going to start unpeeling layers of not only the incidents of rising anti-Asian hate, but ways in which we should consider how to be allies and supportive. We're still trying to get a hold of Ms. Cheyenne Lynn. I don't know if any of you are avid or even casual YouTubers, but she has one of the best breakdowns of the dynamics that have both contributed, she thinks, to anti-Asian hate, but ways of peeling back Asian alliances and relationships worldwide, and that's the broad coverage when she says Asian relationships with other ethnicities, nationalities, and races. And so we're trying to get a hold of her because I think it comes best from her. She is a young Japanese woman who was raised by and adopted by an American white family, and she has some unique but very on point views about racism in and various other isms in the world, various other systems of exclusion and oppression in the world. And so that's why we're eager to get a hold of her. We just haven't been successful in getting a response yet. I think it might be helpful, Cesar, if we post the one video that I shared with you some time ago to our website, to our web page here at More Talk Radio, so people can go visit it until we do get a hold of her. What do you think?
Excellent. Excellent.
Okay. Yeah.
In the meantime, we certainly have you all who are listening and hoping that you're able to join in our conversation this morning. And, you know, it is so indicative of our society that when we see incidents of violence or attack, that too often, more often than not, people do not respond and come to the aid of their neighbor. And it might be scary for people to stand and put themselves between someone who's being attacked and their attacker, but we all have to find the courage and part to be able to stand up and respond. So I am curious for people to share not only times in which they had to intervene, but what is it about our society or the circumstances that we find ourselves in that to make it easier or more difficult to intervene? None of us are perfect, and all of us might find ourselves in a situation where we are under attack or observing someone who is being attacked. And what can an individual or a community do in times to respond to people who are under siege, either individually or in the community? Curious to see what people have to say. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And You know, Celeste, I don't consider myself as a person who's either knows what to do at all the time, and I think that sometimes we freeze up and don't respond, and only later do we say, or do I say, oh, I should have, I could have, what would have happened if I did? But the moment is past. What about you, Celeste? Are you able, are you so in touch with your feelings and your responses that when you see a someone who needs of assistance, how do you respond in those situations?
Oh gosh, you just outed me. Here's my problem. I really have an issue with bullies. Mm-hmm. And I really have to rein in my repugnance and dislike for bullies to the point where I don't jump in too quickly, you know. And one reason I don't like them is, you know, I grew up being bullied but fighting back. And my brothers and I, you know, shorter stature, they're slighter than me because they were built more like my mom and I was built more like my father. And, you know, if we got bullied, we just fought back. We were kind of hard scrabble wrestling. I grew up with boys, you know. I had brothers, and my father taught us all how to box and everything. So we would fight each other sometimes if we got aggravated enough, or just wrestle for fun. And so, you know, I didn't understand why a person thought they had the right to mess with me like that. And so I would fought back. Now, that didn't mean I always won, not by any means. Sometimes I not only won, but I made a new friend because I was able to make my point known. Sometimes, I might have got my butt beat, but it was a Pyrrhic victory because the bully didn't come away unscathed. You know, I bit, I scratched, I gouged. I kicked because I just met. So when I see people being attacked, it brings out that thing in me like, oh, no, this is wrong. You are impinging on somebody else's ability to go through their day without your input. I don't like it. I say something. Now, here's the funny thing. I still have no stature. I'm still short, you know, and I'm older now. But I've learned ways to try to intervene, and I will try things like humor, you know, or some type of de-escalation technique or phrase or something, or energy, just de-escalation, energy first. If I'm in the, you know, if I'm close enough to make a difference, it can be heard. But I also watch myself, because if I don't see that either the person that I'm thinking I'm helping is joining in, or if I see that I am severely outnumbered, I have to determine whether or not this is going to work. I don't want to get this person hurt worse, and I don't want myself hurt or killed. And so, you know, you have to do this balancing act when you're not young and hale and hearty anymore. You know, when you get a little older, you got to figure out what are my tools, what kind of resources do I have. And right. And it, that sounds like a lot of thinking, but those of you who've been in a situation know it doesn't take that long to think at all. You make that assessment rapidly. But I do try to intervene. I just have to recognize I am not, you know, Wonder Woman, and know my limits. And I would say that's how we should respond, but we don't. And most recently, especially according to the article that, you know, you were shared, a lot of people have stood by and watched why a lot of our Asian neighbors and APR have been attacked.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm wondering, what is it that makes us even less likely to intervene, because there have been other times when people have been attacked and we have risen to the occasion, most notably the heroes that passed who intervened when the young women were attacked on our MAX train a few years ago. You know, but now we're hearing that a lot of Asian Americans are being attacked.
Yeah,
and nobody is helping. And so what's up with that? What's up? Why are we not assisting another human being? What is it that makes this particular situation different? And we thought that's a good way to kind of kick off dealing with this anti-Asian hate that has been rearing its head lately, and try to close our ranks to protect each other.
So what are the questions, the ethical responsibility to help a stranger in distress, and the dynamics that prevent people from acting? Now, certainly this has been studied and debated for decades, and you share some example, Celeste, about responding. The incident you referred to was a few years ago in Portland, Oregon. Two young women of color were attacked on a train, and two or three people intervened. One was severely injured, two who died when the person who was attacking the women turned his rage upon them. And so that's an example of people responding to, at that time, it was clearly an anti-Black, anti-Muslim aggressor. But my question is, and I don't know in terms of the details of that incident in which you hold up as an example, I'm sure that there were more than those two women and the three men on that train. And why did or did not other people respond? And again, this is something that people are caught up, have to respond in a microsecond, and whether or not they're able to respond. Have there been incidences in your life when you've been a bystander and you have responded, or has that response been sort of like a callous apathy, which walked past the incident? And so many, we see so many cases today, recently, as Celeste referred to people who are identified as Asian American or Pacific Islanders are attacked, and the movement hashtag Stop Asian Hate has certainly been a way in which people have certainly shared on social media. But there's something more we should do or can do. What are things that you do, or are you able to do, or what should people do when you see those things happening? Give us a call at 503-231-8187. We've all seen the videos of assailant on a busy Manhattan street who knocked down a Filipino immigrant to the ground and then repeatedly kicked her in the head, and surveillance cameras show people watching the incident and not responding. And so often people fail to intervene during acts of violence. Now, maybe not all of us are like Celeste and respond immediately to the bully. What can we do? What are things we ought to do? And certainly, you might have some thoughts about that. And this isn't a conversation where either we accuse people of failure of nerve, or accuse someone of a moral fault. I'm curious about what is it that enable or prevent people from responding. Give us your thoughts. 503-231-8187. Have you been a bystander and saw someone attack either verbally or physically? And how did you respond? You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. My name is Cecil Prescott. I'm here with Celeste Carey, and we are here with you. Go ahead, Celeste.
Oh, I've just said, and we're waiting on you.
Yeah.
To join us for conversation. So, I'm trying to think of, you know, I guess I still want to ask the question I did, you know, earlier about why is it that we've not seen such a backlash as we did against these bullying attacks and this examples of anti-Asian hate? What has changed about us as people? Because when we were hearing of this spate of anti-Muslim attacks and anti-Muslim hate, there was a larger outcry. And it doesn't make sense that we would have this difference, especially when we're all recognizing that life is a little harder for all of us because of all the changes that have happened because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really curious as to what we find different about this situation. What makes it so hard for us to step up? You know, has life become less clear and more frightening, and people are more afraid? You know, and but we also kind of have to personalize it. And like I said, Cecil said, this is not a moment where you're going to be criticized for being less than brave. We're all trying to figure out how to stay encouraged, especially with all these changes coming up on us. You know, more COVID, more economic concerns, and all.
Well, we have a couple of people on the line to respond. Let's go to first, Frances has some thoughts for us. Good morning, Frances.
Good morning, Frances.
Hi, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Having years ago been involved in a situation with some relatives in which an elder was kind of high, and I had to step in to prevent them from injuring a younger, and I got hurt in the process a little bit, but I also realized that I wasn't only protecting the younger, but I was protecting the elder from doing something that he would have regretted for the rest of his life. And on the mat, several times I have just kind of stepped in as a mom to prevent some fights on the mat, you know. And it's kind of interesting that I was thinking about one situation where this one kid, he was big guy, and he's headed back to the back to jump on somebody back there, and I was sitting right by the steps. So before he could get up the steps, I just stood up, and I looked at him and I said, "Not today, honey." And he kind of looked at me, and it was kind of like he looked at me like a frustrated little kid. That's the way it felt. And he turned around. He got off the back of the bus, and the kids behind me thanked me, and I said, "Guys, you know, y'all could have gone to jail for something really stupid, you know."
Yeah.
But anyway, what I'm thinking about is the people who witnessed the execution or the lynching of George Floyd, and they all tried to intervene and would have intervened, but were prevented from intervening because of policemen standing there with his gun.
Yes.
And I don't think that any scenario, I can't imagine how that would feel.
Right.
And even the rookie cop, you can hear on one of the videos, he said, "He has no pulse, shouldn't we turn him to his side?" And that officer Chauvin says, he's staying right where he is.
Yeah.
To me, that's the case right there. The young young cop should have knew from his training that they needed to do something different, and that older cop told him, we're doing just what we're doing. And I can't imagine how that younger cop felt. He kind of went, oh, well, okay, I guess. You know.
And one thing, about the Mr. Floyd's lynching, the older cop, the one who's on trial right now, he was the one in charge, and those other
he's
cops
a senior
were
officer.
Reporting
yes.
to him. And I've been listening to some of the testimonies last week, and just the sense of sadness and grief of those people who are expressed, on the stand, their grief and their sorrow that they could have, they should have done more, and even if they did, they felt responsible some. It wasn't that occurred to me. They show and express more sorrow about about Mr. Floyd than the man on trial.
One thing that I noticed was, and in the media repeats of this clip, they always leave off the end of her statement, but the young woman who did the video and how she apologized to George for not doing more. And then at the end, she says, but I didn't need to do more. He did. And she was referring to that officer. That part is the part that everybody needs to hear over and over and over again. He didn't do what he needed to do.
Exactly.
Even if they try to say that George had a bunch of fentanyl in him or whatever.
What has that got to do with him dying?
Well, exactly. They're going to try to say that that's how he died. However, even if that is how he died, even if that were, which is definitely not the case, if someone is going into cardiac arrest because of an OD, you don't keep your knee on his neck.
No.
Either way, you don't do that.
That's what bothers me is how they can excuse. That's the only time you hear any nuance out of, these racist attacks. It's any time you hear any nuance out of somebody when it's involved in white supremacy. Because any other time, you hear some of the most unsophisticated arguments. But when you hear excuses for why we have a right to murder people, then suddenly all this nuance pops out. It's like, it's uncalled for.
Right. There is no excuse for what happened. And also, what I have discovered in myself, I feel that I become very frustrated and just really, truly, truly, truly annoyed. And I try to maintain some kind of composure because of the young people I know who are expressing a lot of frustration because they're tired of dealing with this. I won't say the word, but they're tired of it. Ever since I can remember, when I was a young, naive girl, married my husband and moved to Northeast Portland, and have witnessed since day one the abuse by the police department, and gone to meetings and listened to people and seen all these murders by police, and all the so-called progressives in our city have acknowledged and say they're going to do something about it, and now over 50 years later it's the same old soup, and I'm tired of it. And I know there are people that have more right to be tired of it than I do, but it's ridiculous, and it needs to stop immediately. Why do people have to, like somebody said the other day, prove their humanity over and over and over again? They shouldn't have to do that. And I'm getting upset, and I might cuss.
Thank you for your call.
Francis, and I appreciate you in terms of response. You said your mother instinct took over, and that's something that's appreciative. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And let's go to Mace. Good morning, Mace.
Good morning. Hi there. I'm calling because I thought this was important. It's an important conversation. And I just wanted to relay that when we were talking about people standing up for other people and then what makes other people just speak out, like the gentleman that got attacked on the MEX for standing up for what was right. They lost their lives for doing what they felt was right. And some people have the ability to express themselves and not tolerate racism when it's right in your face. And it's, for some people, it's, for me, I don't know if it's why it is. I have an explanation of why it is, but I'm a white man from a mixed family, but I'm white. My grandparents were Mexican. I grew up in the Columbia Villa Housing Authority projects. I lived there for almost 15 years of my life. So I was born and raised in the Columbia Villa. All my friends are friends of color, and I'm very comfortable. These are my brothers and sisters. I love them. Their parents took me into their homes. I've always been in that community. My wife is a person of color for 20 years now. So when I hear people, white people, being racist around me, it infuriates me to the point where I'm ready to defend by all means necessary. And I do not tolerate people using racial slurs or derogatory comments around me. It doesn't work in my world. It should not work in our society. And I'll give you a few examples of recently, after we had a president who was an open racist and bigot, that when I was at the bank in Southeast Portland, the heavily Asian community, and I heard someone... Some people were speaking in Chinese. A white woman was in the back telling them that they should speak English. They're in America and whatnot. Mm. You know, we've heard a lot of that. And that was, to me, I was dumbfounded. You know, it's like speaking multiple languages is a gift and it's a talent. You know, it's not something you look down on. And there's no given language in this country. It's not written that you have to speak, you know, English at all. So I spoke up to her and told her, you know, it wasn't right. She should keep her mouth shut. You know, it's not her place to even say that. And it's just ignorant. She continued to talk. I continued to talk. And I brought her down and let her know that it was just what she was saying was wrong. And she might as well just leave. You know, it's not okay to be talking like that, you know.
All right. Wow.
You know? Yeah. I recently, another incident up, I heard someone using the N-word. I saw a confrontation in downtown on 6th and Alder. This is about a year and a half ago. A man in a suit was being berated by some white guy for something. And then at the end of the altercation, it did not get physical. The white man used the N-word while the guy was, you know, everybody around was stunned. And that man, I was like, you know, why would you go that far? Like, using that word is like the lowest common denominator of everything. It's just so dehumanizing. And there again, I spoke up. I told the businessman who was black that it would be okay, that I would handle the situation. And he looked at me with this look like, what? And I was like, no, man, I got this. And, I continued to not allow that individual that used that word to even walk on the sidewalk. I just cannot tolerate, and I don't think any of us as a community member should stand for that kind of action. And the more of us that just stand against racism directly, the better off we're going to be. And the more that the racists will see that we do not tolerate their actions, maybe they should relearn how to be and live in this society.
Hey, thank you, Mace, for standing up. And I think you gave two good examples of what it means, how to be an active bystander when you see racism rears its ugly head. Thank you so much for your call and for willing to not let it pass by without saying or doing something.
Yes, indeed.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO with Celeste, and I am Cico. We have Corey on the line. Good morning, Corey.
Corey.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, guys, from Canada. First of all, good to hear from you guys. I'm someone that stands up, and I think, Celeste, I believe we're both veterans, so I think for people like us, I think there's something that's kind of hardwired that was, you know, we're not ones to kind of stand by and not say anything. So I think that, as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to stand up regardless, but I know I have a way to, like, to de-escalate certain things. I've been trained to do that stuff. But when it comes to a lot of this anti-Asian hate, I know there's this model minority myth when it comes to many Asian people. Asian mm-hmm. people are better, and why can't this group act like more Asian people, et cetera, et cetera. And it's all tied into white supremacy. It's used to sort of separate us.
Yes.
Exactly. But I also remember growing up in Houston, growing up where in Third Ward there were plenty of black-owned businesses, and then around the late 80s, early 90s, there was a shift, and many of these black-owned businesses were taken over by Asian people. I'm not trying to be funny, but, like, especially the hair places were owned by Asian people in Houston, Texas, so if you need to get hair, et cetera, et cetera. But I also remember growing up in
Texas, I feel you.
Okay, but I remember growing up and going to those places, and just to be quite honest, seeing how many Asian people were quite rude to their black customers. And so there was this sort of thing that we acknowledged, to where you could come into these neighborhoods, you don't live in these neighborhoods, but you'll set up shop here, and black people keep your business alive. Yet on the flip side, you treat us in a very rude manner. And so when we saw the video of George Floyd, when you saw Derek Chauvin with his knee on George Floyd's neck, and then Officer Tao was standing there sort of blocking it, I think that sort of that metaphor of, you know, this like white supremacy, that sort of was very shocking. So I'm going to stand up for anybody. I'm in Vancouver, British Columbia, where you have a ton of anti-Asian hate and racism. University of British Columbia, they spray painted University of a Billion Chinese on the wall recently. So you see it, you know, growing up in the South, it's interesting because you see white supremacy and that hatred directed towards another group. And then you say, okay, I want to help out. What can I do? But then part of me also, like you said, is personal members. And I have plenty of Asian friends, but, like, and we've had these conversations. I remember being little and, like, get out of my store, you're shoplifting. I'm like, well, whoa, you know, you're in our neighborhood, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that it's a good conversation to have, because I'm going to stand up for anybody. But I think that model minority myth is used to divide us. And so people of color, especially black people, we need to stand up for Asian people. We need to stand up for everybody. But also, let's look at the legacy and the history of, you know, you go to certain places in, you know, Compton, and you see the Asian communities who have set up shop in black communities. And I kind of wonder about that experience sometimes. By no means do I condone any type of anti-Asian hate, any hatred towards anybody, but I think these conversations need to be had if we're going to get to the root of the problem.
You know, Corey, you hit the nail on the head. That's why we're trying to get a hold of Cheyenne Lin, who is Japanese, Japanese-American, you know, to be point about it. And she explains a lot of that too, and she confronts it. And so we wanted to bring her on, and we're still trying, because sometimes you can hear information better when it's coming from the person who needs to say it, you know, like when you have white people denouncing racism. But you're right, we have to confront a lot of these deep-seated fears, conflicts, and animosities so that we can be the people we want to be. I grew up in St. Louis, and so I know exactly what you said. And it's really interesting, because one of the kids who was a neighborhood bully and bullied me, Victoria, ended up dating Dan Leong, who Chinese, and their family owned one of the Chinese restaurants in the black neighborhood. And that helped me understand a lot about how alliances could be built, and how people can be seen as just people. But nowadays, we are so bombarded by things to keep us apart, like you said, the model minority myth and how that harms interpersonal relationships. But we have to keep plugging away, and we have to ask our Chinese and Vietnamese and Pacific Islanders and all of our Asian friends and family members to help us stand up by confronting the racism and the intra minority racism, so that we can be allies, so that we can deal with those hurts, so that we can salve over those "get out my store, kids, you're stealing," you know, in debt.
Exactly. So thank you guys. I'm glad we're having this conversation. I'll keep listening to you guys. I'm gonna stay up in Canada though, but I'm gonna keep listening.
While you're up there in Canada, spread the word about KBOO, and thank you for staying in touch with KBOO.
All right, gotcha. Talk to you guys later.
All right.
Hey, thank you so much, Corey. From Texas to Canada. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO, where we're talking about things that people can and what they are able to do to stop Asian hate and violence. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And we will go to Bill. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. Speaking about hate, I think we often, I am the person who always reflects back on history as to what has shaped our language and our attitudes of today. And I think we have to remember that while it may seem a long time ago, there was a point where they put the Native people here in reservations. Well, they were internment camps called reservations. They couldn't leave. That shaped the language and attitude towards Native Americans for a very long time, even today. It wasn't long ago that we put Asian people in internment camps in this country, and that shaped the language and attitudes that we are really seeing and hearing today. So when we often talk about the attitudes of the past, what we're talking about is social policy in action. And I want to shed light on the idea of voting law in Georgia and how it not only impacts minorities in terms of African Americans, but when you don't have other groups to come and stand up and say, hey, what you are doing to them, you could easily do to me. So if you are doing something to someone that is unjust, you are truly doing it to me. It's only a matter of time. And I think that many groups have been divided to such a degree that there isn't a common language as to how we address injustice in this country. So not all immigrants who came to this country spoke English to begin with, right? Because they're from all over Europe and they're from other parts of the world. So English is kind of like the common language rather than being the official language. So difference in this country is hard to really address. So when we talk about the mistreatment of Asians, I don't recall there being classes on why internment camps were wrong. I lived across the street from a World War II veteran who used to often describe, I purchased a home from a Chinese American couple, and in his lack of wisdom, he said, I'd rather see you there than them, and I'm a man of color. So if you will, more or less, if you had animosity towards them, then in my opinion, if I weren't here, you might just have that same animosity towards me, considering that you are a white male who was raised in a time in America when any hatred towards anyone other than whites was acceptable. And yes. I think when you look at the policy, and I'm going to get to this thing, when you look at what just happened in Georgia with respect to corporations standing up against laws, and then you had politicians talking about taking away tax breaks, I think that's how embedded the idea of if you stand up and say something in support of, we will find a way to hurt you. That's the new white supremacy in America.
Mm. There is their version of the council culture. I hear you.
Yes. And I just hope that as we progress as a society, that while, you know, we talk about, oh, You know, that's the transgender culture that's fighting for what they want. This is the black people fighting for what they need. This is the Asian culture fighting for what they want. At the core, I think we all have to say, what are we really fighting for when we talk about equality, when we talk about belonging? And that I think it's okay for us to understand it's okay to support other groups in their endeavors, especially if it's about a bigger picture and the treatment of people as a whole. Because I don't think that's what is coming through in many of the instances or complaints today in society. It's how do we treat each other as people and get away from this thing, the dominant culture. And I think when we talk about white supremacy, if we, you know, it's easy to divide race, but really on a flip side, we're talking about a dominant culture. So when you hear someone say, hey, you're speaking a language that I don't appreciate or I can't understand, so you need to speak English, that's the dominant culture saying you need to abide by something I can understand in order for you to be okay, rather than looking at it and saying that I am an individual and I am not here to be subservient to you. We are all here to coexist.
Mm-hmm.
Very well said. Can't say anything better than that.
You know, so please, I appreciate cable. I've been a cable listener for a very long time. And when I moved into Oregon, I think it was the first time I ever discovered a platform anywhere in the United States that I lived that truly allows a voice like my own to speak and to feel empowered through that, through this action of being able to pick up my phone and dial a number and say, hey, this is what I think the community might want to hear. And even when it's not perfectly, you know, expressed, I still feel valued, and it brings me to a point of wanting to be involved. So please keep up, Cable.
You know, all I have to say is this. Thank you. Support Cable. Tell your friends, but more importantly, go to our website and say what you just said as a testimonial, because I think that is one of the most heartfelt testimonials as to why we need to remain solvent and strong in the community so that we can hear the every person's voice. And thank you for your call today, Bill. I really appreciate it.
And continuing on with our conversation, let's hear from Edie. Good morning, Edie.
Good morning, Edie.
I really care passionately about the question you've asked. And I've spent all my remembered lifetime wondering what's the answer to that. I've been trying to figure out why are people dishonest, unfair, and just mean? Like, why are they cruel? And why do they hate? Don't they know we're all connected and it hurts you? And I just didn't get it. And I'm getting some theories. But all my decades of trying to teach people how to question beliefs, how to look at the European heteropatriarchy, capitalism, racism, class, caste. All my years of trying to teach anti-racism, not just tolerance, not just don't be a racist, but actively replace that evil with active good. All my years of creating a school and creating curriculum and activism and prayer and working on myself and taking all these classes and asking friends to really, you know, set me straight. Well, I'm queer, so that's straight's kind of funny. But anyway,
but correct, not straight.
But what has kind of come to me lately is that's all useful and it's all important, and it's not enough. And the Compassionate Listening Project has a 6-week series right now for white-bodied people to deal with and cover and replace more and more, their internalized racism. These are really good intentioned, conscientious people who have been leaders of diversity anti-racism workshops for decades. I mean, these are good people who are taking the class saying, we know we're nowhere near where we need to be and want to be. And what they're saying is that all those things that I've been trying, and I will continue trying, are not enough. We need to have empathy and compassion for ourselves and know what are those needs, you know, usually fear around safety and shame. And then connecting with our common humanity, not dismissing the individuality or the culture or the experience of others and saying now everyone has to be like a white or whatever, but that the listening, the compassionate listening project, which expands upon Marshall Rosenberg's nonviolent or compassionate communication that has brought peace to warring genocidal groups and in all sorts of war zones and horrible and prison gangs and everything. They've expanded beyond that, and that's where I want us to increase our work that's much deeper. And also, I have a traumatic brain injury, so I've forgotten the name, but the name of the book is My Grandmother's Hands. And the black man who is the author, who's so sweet, just listen to YouTube and just fall in love with the man, but is that we really understand the trauma that's gone on for generations and centuries from Europe, where they publicly, you know, torture brutalized bodies by rich whites of poor whites, and how they brought that to the indigenous, and then after enslaving indigenous people would bring enslaved people from Africa and the most heinous evil to them, and vice of, you know, and just all this divide and conquer stuff, that if we look at and have compassion for and learn how to have the courage to deal with our emotions and fears or shame, and look at Brené Brown's works on shame, and work it out through our body, through humming, through rocking, through dancing, through singing, through, you know, things that we can do to let it out of our body so it doesn't go on for more generations and we don't project it out and hurt the next person. It's going to help us all. And I think part of that is when KBOO speakers, hosts can have the passion to point out evil and remind us of the good and bring the vision of the good. We need the no, but we also need the yes and the goal that we're working towards. But also the patience and the compassion and the grace in helping us messed up mortal sinners get to a better place progressively. No matter how much progress we make, there's always more we can. And so that balancing act, it's so hard, and that's why I'm not volunteering to be a spokesperson on KBOO. And I just want to value you and thank you for how you do that balancing act. And before I hang up, just tell people we need to give support to KBOO, if it's our prayers, if it's bringing in some goodies, bring in the money, find ways to reduce the cost of solar panels. We need to really love our hosts and volunteers and staff at KBOO. And that love
can
help us deal with other things.
Well, thank you for that as well. And please, you know, as you heard mentioned by our engineer Sonia earlier, go to KBOO. I believe the extension number is 202. But if you call 503-231-8032, extension 202, leave a testimonial to that effect. You know, we need to hear this, and we need to share it. And I'm not just saying that, you know, to be self-serving, you know, of KBOO, but because I've been with KBOO since 1989, and I'm still here because I believe in the mission and the message and the community of KBOO and how KBOO serves the community. And so I appreciate your words and thank you for your call. You are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO, Portland. Stay tuned at 9 o'clock is the Old Mo Variety Hour and more. And I want to thank everybody for calling in because, you know, it's important that we do have these conversations so we can change the tide so that we can plant seeds and we can motivate people to change. And I the point about, I think it was, might have been Mace who made this point about hearing people get upset because somebody was speaking a different language. One of my very, very best friends was upset one time. He was at a bus stop and people were speaking in a different language, and he, you know, a black man too, got upset and said, "You all need to speak English. You know, this is rude to me." And I asked him, I said, "Why is it rude to you?" They weren't talking to you. Yeah, but they were talking about me. They might have been, I mean, they were talking around me. They might have been talking about me. I said, and if they were, here's the thing. You know, they have just as much right to communicate as if it's them as you and I do. And especially when we're talking in code or we're talking about somebody who might be in earshot. You know, allow them the same rights and privileges you do. Don't let your upset with how racism affects all of us, don't internalize it and turn it on to somebody else. And we have to call out our friends or neighbors or family. You know, we have to call them out because we can do that in love. It's not always easy, and it's not like there aren't risks in family. But if we don't do it, then that harm could grow bigger and end up hurting in a bigger sense. Stand up when you have those chances to stand up in your small intimate circles too. You know, you don't always have to do it when it's people you don't know in an unfamiliar setting. Stand up and nip it in the bud when you see it in the small circles that we have. And then too, I would encourage everybody to learn de-escalation techniques, because just like Francis said, those de-escalation techniques make a big difference. Go ahead. Let's let our next caller on. Robbie, hurry. You've got a few minutes here. We want to hear from you, and good morning.
I'm sorry. This is Sony the engineer. I just told him how short time was and that it didn't look like we were going to have time to fit him in. So I thought y'all were wrapping up.
Well, we were, but Cecil gave me the high sign.
Oh, dear.
I was trying to cut it short.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Sonny. And chat again at another time, Robbie, but thank you for calling. Any wrap-up words, Cecil?
No, I think what we heard this morning were people being able to stand up in their own situation, to stand up for the others. And as we've all know, that we never know what situation we'll be in, whether we'll be the people who are there to defend persons, or whether we will be the people in need of assistance. Regardless of where we are or where we stand, I hope that people remain true to themselves and true to the knowledge that we all are here, we all deserve to be here, and we all have a right to live a life free from harm and danger. Let us continue to build a community where we are there for one another. We don't always get it right, but the challenge is to keep trying.
Keep trying, that's right. And we also want to encourage you to help KBOO keep trying. Support us. Go to our website, www.kboo.fm/give, and support us. Keep us strong and keep us accountable to holding you together as a community that loves each other. Make it strong. Well, happy sunshine and happy Monday on this April 5th, and we will see and hear you next week. Take care.
Missing no, no, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM. You don't know.
KBOO has a number of special t-shirts we've created just for you during our month of special programming. Whether you are a metalhead, a punk rocker, a blue